Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's another Tuesday Talk. Ali here with you. I have an amazing guest with me today. I think the talk is going to be very, very interesting. I am so the amateur in this situation right now. I've got like months worth of talking, you know, live radio, broadcast, internet, you know, Instagram type of experience. This lady is walking in with like 20 years. So I'm not going to embarrass myself by trying to introduce her. I'm going to actually let her do all that. And from time to time, I might kind of ping in with an opinion or a question. Sally, if you wouldn't mind.
I have to say, I did miss a little bit of your introduction there, but thank you so much for the incredibly kind words. And hi to everybody. Salaam alaikum to everybody who is joining us today. And as Ali said, my name is Sally Musa. I'm a speaker, I'm a presenter, and I'm the creator of the show Life Beats. And my work throughout my life has always been about, you know, helping people to become empowered through telling their stories. And, you know, my favorite moments have been behind a microphone where I'm speaking to inspirational people. Sometimes they're uber famous. Sometimes they're hidden gems as they share their experiences, and they always have incredible lessons that blow us away, that we can learn from, that they show us how they live a life of purpose and impact. And that's why I'm just so incredibly honored to be asked today to come on your platform, Mental Health UAE. So thank you for inviting me.
No, it's fantastic to have you. This is absolutely great. Let's get moving. Tell me a little bit about why this topic. I mean, the first time, I know we were talking about it earlier, and I was reading it, and I was like, you know, the power of listening to your soul. And then it just got me thinking, and I found myself like, you know, in that moment, I'm like, wait, what? Oh, like, okay. You know, kind of like, it got me like cooking in my head. So I want you to tell us why this topic.
So, you know, Ali, it's really interesting. The word for psychology in Arabic is ilm al-nafs, right? So that literally translates into the knowledge or the science of the self or the soul. Now, in Arabic, it just really, it takes you to that connection, because the word nafs is the same for self and for soul. So it tells you right there where we come from. Where does our sense of self comes from? It comes from the soul. And, you know, it's basically referring to our own deepest spirit, our own truth. And every single one of us obviously has a unique soul. We are unique in our own way. And it's, we're so much more than our physical bodies. There's a deep and profound connection between the physicality of us, who we are mentally, and what's happening with us at the soul level. And some people, they call it consciousness. Some people might think that it's intuition, but becoming aware of that can mean the difference between a breakdown and a breakthrough in life. And, you know, some people can hear their soul or their inner voice so clearly. You know, you can see it in people, and it's something that they've honed over time, and it guides them to greatness, right? And you can see that they're pursuing their purpose and their greatness and who they are to incredible levels that other people don't. But with most of us, we have so many distractions of everyday life around us. You know, we're talking everything from family to friends to culture, society, traditions, friends, school, work, social media, whatever it is, you name it. We tend to lose touch with ourselves at that soul level. But despite all of those distractions, your soul is actually always communicating with you. It's always giving you signs of where you should be going. And it all comes through how we're feeling. Sometimes it's a feeling of deep joy when we're doing something that we absolutely love. It's like it comes to from a place that you almost can't describe. You know, that's when you're really in touch with what gives you that incredible joy and passion, because it's coming from the soul level. And then sometimes it's kind of like that feeling of, you know, something just isn't quite right. Sometimes it comes in the form of anxiety. Sometimes it's a depression. Sometimes you hear it loud and clear. It's like screaming from inside of you. It's like this huge wake-up call. And it's not always obvious, you know, outwardly. That's the interesting thing, because I've interviewed so many people, thousands of people, and I can tell you so many times I have people sitting in front of me who were at the top of their career. On the outside, they look like they have the perfect life. They have the house, they have the cars, they have the kids, the beautiful spouse, the amazing job. And yet inside, they're so deeply unhappy because they haven't connected with what matters most for them. And yet this is something that we rarely speak about or even get taught, you know, let alone learning enough about it so that we can harness our own power of our deep inner voice that comes from the soul. And that is something that we have to keep doing over a lifetime. And it can mean the difference between living a life of real joy and purpose and impact and significance, and living a life where no matter how much you achieve, inside you're just deeply miserable. And, you know, this is something that I've seen time and time again.
I hear you on that. And I think it makes sense, right? A lot of times, and so many people that I've spoken to over the years, and myself included, right? I find myself just busy, like running around. I've got this to get done. I got that to get done. And you kind of feel, how should I put it? You feel unease inside, like something's off balance, something's not right. I can't put my finger on it. And then it starts to kind of like snowball and get bigger. And then all of a sudden, ooh, why am I feeling so anxious? Like what's yes. going on? And it kind of sometimes just creeps up on you.
That is exactly what happens. Sometimes it creeps up on you and sometimes it just hits you in the face because you haven't listen to it. You haven't taken that, because sometimes, you know, people go, I don't know why I'm in this situation. I keep, you know, finding myself in this situation over and over again in this type of relationship where I get dumped or I get this or I get that. This negative situation keeps coming up for me. And they don't realize they haven't learned the lesson. They haven't listened to what's going on at the deeper level to understand what is going on for them and to learn that lesson and to move on. It's their soul talking to them in that situation. That's why we are there. And so, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, I always get asked the question, how'd you get into radio? Mm-hmm. You know, when I get guests coming on. Yeah. And, you know, this is a very similar situation because I didn't want to be a radio presenter when I grew up. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a fashion designer, right? I wanted to be a fashion designer from before I can remember.
Wow, so cool.
I draw and, you know, I can do like lifelike pictures. I do fashion illustration. It was like a passion. Like I just loved it so much. It was like the singular focus of I wanted to go study fashion design and become a fashion designer. And I got there. I got into the university. I started studying this degree that I had wanted so much. And yet inside, you know, I was doing really well as a student and whatever, but inside I was just like feeling empty. I was like feeling incredibly sad. And I went through depression. I had a period where I went through depression. Now, you know, I'm, for those who don't know, I'm an Arab Australian. So I'm from an Arab background and I grew up in Australia, in Sydney. And I didn't understand why I was feeling like this. And for me, I didn't grow up around a community of Arab Australian Muslims. I didn't know what that was like until I was at university. And I happened to find through radio that there was a community of young people like me who had this multifaceted identity like me. And then, you know, I connected with them. We started working on community projects. And then in the middle of my degree, I changed degrees. I decided to change degrees. I went and studied sociology and social policy. Why? Because I just had this epiphany where I was just like, I want to make a difference in the world. And I feel like I was at the time, I was like, oh, but fashion is so superficial and it's just, you know, it doesn't really have any deeper meaning. So I was like, just completely, like, you can't imagine my parents at the time going, what is this? What is going on? You know, but to me, it made sense. It didn't make sense to other people. And so I became a community development worker. I was working on community projects and helping to give people a voice, you know, marginalized communities like Arabs and Muslims in Sydney, like in Australia. And, you know, working with families who were having issues with addiction and things like that. And so lots of different types of projects that I felt like had purpose and meaning, right? And that was the key. And then I got asked to go on community radio and to create a program in Ramadan. And that's where that started. So I went behind a mic and lo and behold, I just like loved it so much. And it became this platform. We could, you know, for the first time, it felt like, and this was, you know, we just marked the anniversary of September 11. This was all just before September 11 happened, right? So imagine the impact at that time and the way that Arabs and Muslims were being viewed. And here we were young people on radio. And for the first time, we were able to express our views. For the first time, we were able to talk about our dreams, our aspirations, our issues, you know, and talk about who we were and define ourselves, tell our own stories for the first time, not have someone else define us and tell our stories. And that was really it for me. You know, we were talking to political figures about, you know, what was going on for us and how we, you know, needed to be more part of the wider community. It was a huge thing. And for me, that's where it all started, basically, about 20 years ago. But you know, what's interesting throughout that time, and this is something that we want to talk about today, I want to talk about today, that this is like a journey that has taken all of this time. And now I come back full circle because, you know, the creative side never left, right? I've always had that love of art and design and beautiful things. I'm just fascinated by beauty, right? And I realized actually that beauty, arts, the arts, this is what speaks to our soul. You know, great music, great poetry, great art, great architecture, it makes us feel and touches us and moves us in ways that nothing else actually can. Our lives would be so incredibly barren and we would have such limited expression of the depth of what's going on inside us if we didn't have the art. So actually, now when I come back to it, I emphasize that and I say, this is so important. You know, we see arts getting cut first thing in, you know, schools and faculties and things like that, where actually it's so incredibly vital. So it's, for me, it's come full circle.
Wow, that's great to hear. And you're 100% right on all of these things. And, you know, it's interesting. I've got, you know, a roughly similar-ish type of story. I was a systems engineering major and I'm like, man, I'm not feeling this. And then, you know, I was kind of lost for like a week, 10 days. And I had a really, really good friend of mine. His name is also Ali. And he kind of stepped in and said, man, go read the catalog, read every major, read every course. You are the sum of the courses you take. I'm like, what? That was deep right there, man. I switched to business. And, you know, my parents didn't understand. They're like, what? You're so close to graduating. Why do you want to switch and spend extra time? I'm like, man, I'm not feeling it. And then they were supportive and said, you know what? We don't get it, but go ahead.
Right. And
I didn't plan to get into teaching and I'm at the university teaching now. It's interesting how I guess you're kind of guided by this inner voice, whether you're actively listening to it or you're not actively listening to it. I think if you don't listen to it, it gets louder. And you know, if you listen to it, you kind of find that calm and peace. And, you know, talking about the importance of arts, and I've always had this discussion with people, especially when it comes to the schools. The school budgets everywhere are getting cut. And, you know, getting into universities and colleges, they want to see the sciences. They want to see the maths. They want to see the grades there. Okay, whatever, art, whatever, design, technology, whatever. You know, that type of stuff. I'm like, guys, this is where the creative is. This is where you invent. This is where it's all beautiful. I mean, even now you're having a bad day. You're like, what? I'm going to go for a long drive. On yes. that drive, you're listening to music.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to go for a walk. It's not the walk. It's what you're looking at. You pause and you look at nature like, oh, how nice is that? Oh, oh, look how beautiful that is. And a lot of it, we don't actively realize. So I'm like right there with you. Exactly on this. Talk to me more about, you know, and we're by the way, you know, since I teach, I deal with young adults all the time. And I'm still finding so much, I'm not going to call it a generation gap. I'm going to call it generational friction. How do you get the parents on board? How do you get them to kind of, if not see, but how can you get them to at least accept your being okay with the unknown into, you know, go be a doctor, go be an engineer, secure your future, you know, go get married, go do this. You know, it's just kind of like they have this old school checklist that's burned in their head that doesn't want to shift.
You got that right. You got that right. The times are changing, but the old attitudes are not. And I think this is one of the most, maybe the most crucial question around this. I think the way that this affects parenting is that people have to stop having children so that they can fulfill their own dreams and reenact their own childhood traumas that they have yet to heal in themselves. This is what happens. Because a lot of times, parents fall into that trap of procreating simply to have trophy children. They spend their entire lives trying to mold their child into what they think society thinks are successful people, despite what the child themselves may want. Time and time again, you see this because they think that child is a reflection of themselves and their own achievements or the lack thereof, right? So because of that, and this is really the first mistake, parents try to control their children. You know, it's that checklist that you're talking about, Ali. And you will literally hear parents say, oh, I can't control him. I can't control her. When their children act up, you know, we're going way back, like day one, okay? Behavior, you know, with little kids, right? They say, you know, I can't control my child because if they're acting up, you know, then they must be badly behaved. I haven't done something right. But actually, they're like that because they're reaching out for something. They need your attention. They need comfort. They need safety. They need love. They need care. They need a hug. They need your presence as a parent. But, you know, as parents, we often want what is the most convenient, the quickest thing. We pacify them with an iPad or candy, a cookie, whatever it is. Or sometimes with physical force as well. We crack down. We think that's going to get the child in line, right? Because that's the fastest thing that's going to fix the problem. Because, of course, parents are judged on the behavior of their kids. If they are well-behaved, meaning, you know, they're quiet and lovely, then that parent must be doing a great job. If that child misbehaves and they're disruptive, then that parent is seen as not doing what's necessary to control their child. And you will get those looks if you've been in the supermarket. You will get those looks from people who are shopping in the aisle with you going, you know, that is that parent just not doing their job. That's where it all starts. That's from day one. And then you get, you know, boys who are taught from an early age to suppress their emotions. You know, big boys don't cry and they're taught to be tough and masculine and strong and to be the most powerful one in any given situation. And, you know, sometimes they do that. Parents impose that on their boys without giving them that burden of responsibility that is really placed so heavily on girls, you know, for every action that they take. You know, girls are taught to be pretty. They're taught to be nice. They're taught to be quiet. They're taught to be obedient and not take up too much space. You know, whether
the honor and shame of the family resides with the girl. what happened here, man? When did we make that decision?
Exactly. Exactly. Not, you know, don't do anything that's going to shame us. Mm-hmm. Don't try anything new. You know, you'd better stick to the line. You know, don't put on weight. Don't be too big physically. You know, don't have actions that are too loud. You know, yep. Make sure you get good grades at school. And if you don't, what's wrong with you? You know, and then it moves on, you know, to what you were talking about. You have to become a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer. There's a set, like you said, there's a set list of, you know, acceptable careers.
Yeah.
You know, for usually for the boys, you know, and to then marry thin, beautiful women who can cook and their parents will pre-approve and they want their girls to grow up to become meek and thin and lovely and obedient wives that are going to have so many children. I know that sounds like a big stereotype, but you know what? There are degrees of this. Mm-hmm. There are remnants of this everywhere, whether it's to that extreme or there are bits and pieces of that. And that is really, that is still so prevalent, right? If you're not married by a certain age, you know, then it's the end of the world. If you get married, when are you going to have the first baby?
Yeah.
When you have the first baby, when are you going to have the second and the third? You know, when you have those, when are you going to have a boy? Oh, you know, yes. And make sure if you're a girl, make sure you stick to your pre-pregnancy weight.
Oh, don't my put goodness.
Too
yes.
much weight.
This is, I'm not going to say it's a bias or a stereotype. This is fact. I'm telling you straight up.
Yeah.
And you know, the way I've raised my kids has kind of been the opposite of this. And I've kind of gotten looks at from everybody. With the exception of maybe a few close friends who are of my similar mindset. You know, my daughter was studying for some exam and she was stressing out and she was like, I could see that she was like on the verge of tears and she's trying to be tough. And I passed by, she was sitting on the dining table and I was like, what's wrong? No, nothing, Wobo, nothing. I'm like, why are you worried about this? It's a stupid test. No, but then I'm going to get a bad grade. I'm like, who cares? Oh, but I'm like, but what? I'm the Baba. And the Baba says, Baba don't care. You know what? Let's just cancel school. You don't need to go to no school. And she just looked at me like I said the weirdest thing on the world because all of her friends are getting pressure from their parents. Study, make sure you get good grades. And then I'm the weird dad who says, man, forget school. It ain't worth you being upset and sad over. We'll figure something else out. And she just looked at me like, what am I going to do with this guy? Like, dang, man. Like, because even there's peer pressure. And that kind of trickles down from the same society. You know, you got to look a particular way. And all the cultures have their own weird things. Oh, we don't like curly hair. Go straighten your hair. I'm like, why? So many things are, for me, honestly, are totally illogical. Yet we're seeing them. And you're right. We're seeing them in varying degrees, but we are still seeing them. And I find that shocking.
You know, what's interesting? I mean, that is all happening. But what does that then lead to if we're looking at them, you know, when they're grown, when they're fully grown, they're an adult now, you know, they grow up into adults who are there just to please their parents because all of their life, you know, that parents have this wonderful way of guilt tripping you into doing what they want you to do. Because as children, we love our parents. And as parents, so there's a couple of dynamics happening here. As children, we love our parents. We can see how much they do for us, how much they want good things for us. We want to honor that. We want to love them. And we do. And that's a great thing. But at the same time, if we don't follow that exact plan, you know, we get guilt tripped. And it's like, are you trying to kill me? You know, how many times have you seen parents going, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to kill me? You know, why won't you do? You know,
I carried you for 9 months.
Right. And so what happens is, you know, it becomes this codependent relationship. This is the relationship we don't want to have with our kids, where we guilt trip them into loving us and being there for us, because that's a control that continues into adulthood. And then they go into relationships where they seek that validation from someone else because they've been told through the actions of their parents that they're not enough as they are, right? So all of those expectations, if you're not meeting all of those expectations, you don't have my full love. They move on to a relationship in life where they have a partner who expects 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And if you don't meet those expectations, I'm not going to give you love. You know, it becomes this codependent thing where they get blamed for the unhappiness of their parents. And, you know, here's the thing, like parents do it because they love us so much. They never want to lose us. They want to have that bond always. Well, are you going to have a bond with your kids where, you know, you are, you make them basically feel guilty and love you for that? You know, there's that attachment, there's that unhealthy attachment. Or are you going to create that relationship with your child where the whole idea, and this is what's meant to happen, you know, for us, as we're bringing up our children, we're supposed to be there to help them discover who they are, not to become a reflection of who we are, which means we have to become aware of, like, what are our traumas that we haven't healed from? And how do we need to relate to our kids? We need to listen to them, you know, and that's where the whole listening to the soul comes in. Listen to their concerns, listen to who they are, listen to their dreams and their hopes. And, you know, that's, and nourish that voice in them, not the voice that is always saying, oh, you know, if you don't follow these instructions, then you're going to be a failure in life. We need to be helping them to develop their own inner voice that is going to get them through the hardest of times, to give them that emotional resilience, to tell them that they are enough. They have all of the tools inside of themselves to handle anything and to not be overprotective. You know, that's another thing that parents do where they get like all helicopter parent and, oh, I want to protect my child, so I'm going to, you know, make this very, like, you know, very, very set plan for their life and whatever. But when they actually do the opposite, you know, they set them up for failure because they haven't allowed them to make their own decisions. They haven't allowed them to listen to what's going on inside them, you know. And, you know, we were talking about boys. Boys are taught to suppress their feelings. And then where does it go? It goes into outbursts of anger, outbursts of resentment. It goes into violence, excuse me. Or it goes into a deep sadness that is numbing because you have to shut it off because you've been taught to shut it off your entire life over and over again. No, don't cry. It's okay. It's fine. You can get up and it'll be okay. Don't cry. You know, you have to go and get those good grades. Otherwise you'll be a failure in life. You know, like whatever it is, we're told to shut it all down because you have to keep going in life. Excuse me. Because that's what our parents were taught to do as well. Yep. So then we have to get to that place where we can say to our kids, no, wait, let's listen to that. Let's listen to where those emotions are coming from. Let's listen to what that means. And I had a weird experience just even the other day with a friend of mine. I was talking to her about something that was bothering me. And I said, you know, and like, this is actually the perfect time and the perfect example, you know, COVID-19 is happening right now and the world is in absolute, you know, chaos in so many different mm-hmm. ways. And I was talking to her about some things that were bothering me. And I said, oh, but that doesn't matter. She said, what do you mean that doesn't matter? That's important. Let's talk about that. Let's see where that's coming from. And it made me go back and back and back and realize where the source of that was coming from. And it made me aware of, you know, where those feelings were coming from. And it was so much deeper than I had thought. And so this is where it's about, okay, stopping and stopping that noise and going back and listening to your soul. Go back and talk to yourself, talk to your child, give them a hug, give them time, you know, listen to what's important to them, because there is two things. It will, if they can cultivate that voice inside of them, it will bring out their greatness and their mastery and their beauty and their ability to take on incredible challenges in the world. Mm-hmm. Or if you shut it down, it will numb them. And you know, people will turn to all sorts of addictions, whether it be substance abuse or whether it be shopping or whether it be, you know, whatever it is, they will turn to something else because they're looking to fill that void. And that's what happens. So we have to stop shutting it down and opening it up and listening.
I agree with you. You know, what worries me, Sally, honestly, is, okay, you and me, we're having this discussion, we're having this dialogue. And I've had, you know, similar discussions with a lot of people I know, a lot of friends also. And they just look at me like, no, bro, this is not how you raise kids. What are you talking about? We can't give them freedom to choose what they want to do. They're kids. What do they know? And that's the majority of cases. But, you know, if I'm looking at the other side of the coin, what about the person who has been, you know, guilt-tripped their entire life into, you know, obedience of parents and fault and living basically their parents' dreams in whichever weird way it is? How do they get out from under this? You know, whether it's religious or cultural or social or family pressure, whatever, you know, if the parents want to guilt you into something, they'll plug in something, you know, take this, plug it in, boom, let's throw it in there. Let's get the kid to do what they want. And quite honestly, you're setting your own children up for terrible relationships. If this is what they see in relationship with their parent, they're not going to get a decent relationship with a spouse in the future. That's not going to happen. But how do you change it? How does a person who is the subject of all of this guilt and all of this shame, how do they get out from under it without, you know, God forbid we offend our parents, you know, and we're taught, no, the obedience to parents is important. I know that has a place. But at some point, there's got to be a line that's got to be drawn somewhere. Otherwise, I do know so many people who are suffering. I've got friends who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s who are still suffering. So how do we get out?
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. You know, if you don't break it, like we said earlier, it will come up over and over again in your life in lots of different ways. And it's up to us to pay attention. And, you know, for us, when we become parents, we have to be aware of that. And the first thing is, before you can do that with your kids, you have to do it to yourself and with yourself. And this is why, you know, platforms like Mental Health UAE are so vital, because sometimes you might not be able to go to a friend to do this. You might not go to a family member because they're going to be biased in one way or another. And you need to go to a professional to unpack what's been going on for you. Have a talk with someone about it. There is no shame. There is no guilt in doing that. We have to stop shaming each other for wanting to be better as people, as human beings. Having good mental health is about being better as human beings, being the best version of ourselves. And that will come up time and time again, you know, these issues and what's going on. First of all, you know, we will have pain inside of us. You can choose to ignore it, but it will just keep on going. It will keep building, right? Or you can be aware of it and become aware of where it comes from. And then you have two choices. You can either change it. That might be a possibility for some people, or you might be in a situation where you think, I have to accept it right now. I have to accept where I am, but at least you're aware. You're aware, and that changes so much already. And hopefully you get to a place where you can change it. You can change your relationship with your own parents, which will then help you to change your relationship with your own children. So this is where it starts. It starts with each and every single one of us, because we can't change anyone else. This is the thing that we have to understand. Like, if there's one massive takeaway that I want to, you know, share today, is that you are not responsible for the happiness of anybody else on the planet except for your own.
Oh my goodness. Every time I say that to somebody, they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, the most important person in your life is you. And that's where it needs to start. And
it's 100%.
And it's like I told them something like, you know, we're living on Mars or something. Look at me weird. I'm like, guys, this is the reality. You got to start with you. And if it doesn't start with you, everything around you doesn't work. If you're off balance, nothing else will fall into balance. And it's such a difficult concept to grasp, yet it's so simple. You know, I'm one of my favorite authors when I got into the whole mental health space. And as an academic, I just kind of like had to deep dive into it. And one of my favorite authors, Brené Brown, talks about, shame and the acceptance of accepting our shame. And in order to do that, we have to be brave. I never thought of it from that perspective that, you know, for me to admit something is where I would need to start. And for me to be able to do that, I got to be brave. All of a sudden, like, you know, I was like, man, my ducks are in the wrong order. I got to realign stuff. And then it started making sense and things started to get clear.
This is it, exactly where it starts. And I love that you talked about shame just now, because, you know, this is vital in this whole discussion, because let me give you an example of one person who's so incredible, Chanel Miller. She talks about this. You know, she was the famous rape victim in the Brock Turner trial in the US, Brock Turner being this hotshot swimmer from Stanford University. He sexually assaulted Chanel Miller. And she initially remained anonymous. And, you know, despite being the victim of this heinous crime, in court, she was questioned about every single decision she had ever made, from what she ate to what she wore to who she spoke to on the phone, and so much. And so much so that she was, you know, shamed into doubting herself and doubting the truth of what happened to her that night, and even doubting how she felt about it. Right now, that is huge. And you might well say that, you know, that happens in court. Lawyers do that all the time, right? It's their job to plant doubt. It's perfectly normal. But just think about it for a second. How many times does that happen to us on a daily basis? Whether it's a child coming to a parent and they are feeling uncomfortable or pained by something, and instead of listening to them and helping them to develop their inner voice and trust their inner voice by questioning where their feeling is coming from, they shush them. They pacify them. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. No, that can't possibly be true. You know, that person is so good. They would never do that. You know, or at work when you speak up and you're punished for it. Yep. Or when you see that your ethnicity isn't represented in the media that the world consumes, or that you're represented by negative stereotypes, or when you have a partner who dismisses you and doesn't pay attention to your needs, you know, or whether you're grieving over the loss of a loved one or an ended relationship, and someone comes up to you and you know, a friend says, but look, you have so much to be grateful for. Look at all the other things you have in your life. All of that, you know, it doesn't come all at once. Mm-hmm. It's little by little. These are all just examples of how our soul gets silenced, how our inner voice that accumulates over time, it just gets silenced, small act after small act after small act. And all of that accumulates inside of us into dysfunction. And then that forms our ideas about who we are, or actually who we think we should be, right? And that can lead to a rejection of our true self, who we really and truly are, that makes us happy and sets us free, basically. And it is so interesting because, you know, to that, there's an incredible quote from an American thinker. His name is Charles Horton Cooley, and he's a sociologist, and he studied exactly this subject, how we form our ideas of ourselves within a society, right? And one of his most famous quotes is this: you are not the way that you see yourself, right? You are not who you think you are. You are not who somebody else thinks you are. You are who you think they think you are.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's not about who we think we are. Okay. Our ideas of who we are formed by other people. It's formed by the teacher who might think I'm smart, or my parent who thinks I am, you know, obedient, or, you know, my partner who thinks I am beautiful or not. If they don't think that, then you're not that. So this is about losing that voice inside of us and passing on that power to somebody else and allowing them to define who we are, when in fact it should be us taking back our story, ourselves, and us defining who we are, who we think we are, and who we want the world to see us as. That's what makes us happy.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was having this discussion a handful of weeks ago with a friend, and I said, listen, I don't know how to explain it to you, but you aren't who you think you are. You are a sum of a lot of different influences, and the perception of those influences is who defines you. He's like, what are you talking about, man? I'm like, look, think of it as microdosing. Society is toxic, and everyone is microdosing you. Tiny bit, tiny bit, tiny bit, tiny bit. You don't feel it from one individual. Oh, you look tired today. You know, the number of times somebody said, well, why do I look tired? You know, and especially I'm talking about in reference to, let's say, women. Oh, you look tired today. They're like, I don't feel tired. Well, maybe I look tired. Oh, I didn't put up enough makeup on or enough concealer or whatever it is, right? Oh, you look tired today. Okay, that wasn't meant as a bad thing, or that wasn't meant as something you should take offense to it. That's something you don't even like think about, but that's that tiny microdose. And then you're having lunch, you're a bunch of friends, and you're having, you're going to eat fries? It's a little, tiny little microdose, right? And now all of a sudden, now your brain is image conscious, and what do I look like, and what do I say, and you shouldn't laugh that loud, or, you know, whatever it is, these tiny, tiny things, sometimes just a look, or just like a shrudge, or whatever it is. And what that does is it after a while, it creates this toxicity inside you where you don't, you know, identify with who you actually are, and you start identifying with what everyone has told you about you. And now that's created a toxic atmosphere. And I think that's where, you know, and rightfully so, coming back to what you were talking about, you don't listen to your inner voice anymore. You disconnect from your soul. And now all of a sudden, you might not even realize it, but you're living the life others are expecting of you to live. And then you're like, yeah, this is me. I'm like, that's not you. Remove everybody around you. Give it a week and then see who's left behind. And all of a sudden, you're not going to be wearing the clothes that you were wearing. You're not going to be carrying the handbag or the watch or the shoes. You might not even be driving the car you're driving. You're like, man, I don't even like this type of car. I like that type of car. Why am I even driving this type of car? Because your clique or who you think you identify with don't actually match up. And that's, it's like very catch-22. You're not listening to self. You listen to everybody, and that goes back and pushes you away from listening to self all over again.
And social media obviously is the perfect place to compare ourselves to everybody else. And, oh, she's achieving so much more than me, and he's doing so much better, and his car is so much. And you start wanting things that you didn't think you really wanted. And if you kind of, exactly to your point, Ali, if you step back and go and just examine your goals for a second, like just for everyone, just step back and go, what are my goals in life and why do I want them? Where did that come from? Just like, you know, again, you know, go back, talk to yourself, ask yourself the questions and unpack that and go, well, why do I even want this job? Why do I even want this car? And then you realize that some of it might have been, you know, that your friends, you saw your friends driving a certain car, or it was on social media, or this person or that person, or it had nothing to do with you and what you deeply want inside. Yeah. And, you know, going back to the idea of being shamed into not wanting the things that we really do want, you know, it's about coming back to that thing of learning to trust ourselves again. Mm-hmm. Learning to trust that inner voice again. And that means going into a place that is quiet, that is free from that distraction. You know, sometimes you might need a friend or a professional to do that even. Yes. Because you know what? Sometimes we will have had experiences in life that are traumatic that we might have, you know, completely just blocked out or we just, you know, we put it aside and we don't want to think about it or talk about it, you know, because we need to move on. We've been taught, you know, again, you know, to shut things away and to just move on and achieve and go and be better and this and this and this. And, you know, sometimes it actually takes a professional to unpack that for you and go, wait, that it was that experience that makes you think the way that you do today. It's that experience mm-hmm. that has put you into this relationship that you are in now in your life. It's that experience that, you know, put you into, you know, this situation here. So it's about coming back to all of that. And so once you clear all of that, you're able to kind of trust again your own voice. You unpack it all and you just kind of go, well, what's really, truly, deeply important to me? And for a lot of people, it is a lot smaller and it is a lot simpler than what they started out with. And that's the incredible thing, that it just kind of, you just kind of go, I don't actually need as much stuff or to achieve as much as I was told I needed to.
So many friends, oh man, I don't get influenced by social media. I don't get influenced at all. I'm like, man, you get influenced when you go to buy groceries. What are you talking about? I'm like, one of the first things that you learn when you want to live on a budget, you want to save money, is they will tell you before you leave your house, write a grocery list of the stuff you need. And when you go shopping, only buy what's on the list.
Yes.
Okay. The fact that you have stuff other than what's on the list in your shopping cart means you are that easily influenceable. And there is billions of dollars of research that goes into product placement, branding, packaging, colors, temperature, lights, music, to entice you to buy. There's reasons why they have chocolate right next to the checkout counter. I mean, we teach this stuff in organizational behavior. It's one of our courses, you know? And so I'm like, you're influenced when you're going to go buy groceries. You think social media doesn't influence you? It does. It does. And exactly what you said, I'm like, guys, look, you take a break, step away. And guess what? You've already created a mess in your head. And you know, just like when you have a mess in your house and it's too much for you to clean, you call in the professional cleaners, go to a professional, sit down with a therapist, sit down with a counselor. They will help you in ways you can't help yourself. You don't have the right tools yet. And they will help you with the right tools to help yourself. And exactly as you said, just unwrap it, unravel it. Then you can actually see who you are for yourself. You're just wrapped up in so many layers of stuff, of people, of social, of shoulda, woulda, coulda, look this, look that. You're missing out the real you.
Oh my God. You know, when you talked about the unwrapping there, it's like when you unwrap it, you realize the gift that you are.
Yes.
That your soul is. You know, it's interesting. I have a friend, Dima Ayyad, a big shout out to Dima Ayyad, who is a fashion designer here in the UAE. And she has a beautiful line of t-shirts that says "you as is" in Arabic and in English. And I just love these so much. The message behind them is so powerful. I mean, you know, yes, at its most simple, it kind of says you are enough. But actually, like if you stopped for a second, just stop for a second, stop all of the noise and stop for a second and think about how powerful you are. You know, if we strip all of that, all of the distractions away, we begin to realize how powerful we are, how powerful our voice is, how powerful our story is when we share our story with somebody else and that helps them or it inspires them. What we can do when we really go inside and we listen to who we are, this is incredible. People have who can do that, just they can't believe the power that they have as a person, you know, when they do that. Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about, okay, you have to go and find the professionals, it's definitely that. Definitely go and do that. I would advise that. But definitely also, and this might be a lot more difficult, to set up your own environment where you're surrounded by people who help you to see the beauty that is inside of you, who help you and encourage you to bring that out, whether it be what we think of as negative feelings like mm-hmm. sadness or anxiety or, you know, anger even, that's all coming from a place. But people around you who can encourage you to get that out, to get your own gifts out of what's truly burning and wanting to come out from inside of you to create in the world and to influence the world. Because whatever it is that's deeply inside of you can only influence the world positively. And that needs to come out. Somebody who can, I mean, I was lucky, you know, when I started out in radio, I had people, I was surrounded by mentors who could see a potential in me that I didn't know was there. That is huge. You as a university professor, you can do that with students. That is so powerful.
Yeah.
You know, there are friends who can do that with you and say, wait, but don't you see how talented you are here? You're amazing. And you're like, what? I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know that that was even significant. And they can show you these things. So it's about, and again, you know, choosing those people is guided by what's going on inside you. You will know, you know, we have that gut feeling when we meet someone. Oh, yes. You know, this is a person that I really, and sometimes you can't explain. It's like you meet someone and you're like, it feels like I've known them forever. And you could talk for hours and hours and hours. Yeah. And sometimes you meet someone and you have this feeling, you're like, something's not right here. And
something's off.
Gotta get away, right? So, you know, that's all coming from the same place.
Yep. Very true. Very true. I talk to, you know, I've got, you know, very close friends of mine, and I tell them, like, look, you have potential, but you don't see the potential that I see, because I have a different perspective, whether that's just years of experience or my age or whatever you want to call it. But the problem is you're not seeing it. And because you don't see it, you are living in this much of a range of potential. But I'm telling you, your potential's here. So let me help you a little bit, try to go from this view to this view. Because as soon as you start seeing this view, you start living that breath of life. It's not easy to accept. And you know, I tell me and Latif, I've had this conversation many times. And I tell her, listen, I know you can't see it. I'll make you see it. And when you see it, you believe it. Let's go. Let's do this.
You are exactly the kind of person to be around on a daily basis, Ali. But you know, on the flip side of that, and this is really tough, right? Not only to surround yourself with the right people, but to acknowledge the truth that there are some people that you have to limit your interaction with.
Oh, yes.
Because they are the ones who are limiting, like you said, your potential. Where do you think, you know, these ideas that people have about their limited potential come from? There are people who have placed that idea in their head.
Yep.
And sometimes we don't even realize it.
Live in this box.
Yes.
Why are you stepping outside this box? You can't. You are not bigger than this box. And all of a sudden, you decide, yep, this is the box I'm supposed to live in. These are the wrong people to be around. And I keep telling everybody, all my friends, I tell them, look, I don't need you to have a million friends. Give me one. Give me two. Real, real friends who will call you out on your shit. Those are the real friends you want, who will tell you you're not doing enough. You need to do better. Or you know what? Why are you busting ass on this? Calm down. Chill. This is not a race. They will put you in check with the real you. And that helps you go back and build the real you.
Exactly. Some people who, it doesn't matter how many there are, but those who can encourage you in the right direction, encourage you to pursue your dreams, encourage you, no matter how hard it gets, to not give up on what you really, really want. You know, because we all have those people who are just like, oh, you know, who do you think you are? You know, and it could be anybody. It could be your coworker. It could be your boss. It could be your friend, right?
Sometimes it's your parents. Oh my goodness.
Sometimes it's your parents.
I've seen it time and time again. Oh, you're a girl. You can't do this. And this is the same student that whose parents told her you can't do that. I'm like, not only can you do this, you can do it better than 100 boys can do it. Why don't you show them? What? I'm like, prove it. In the face of proof and evidence, what will they say? You can't do it, bro. It's done. So, exactly. But you're right. You're right. It goes back to being honest with yourself, being real, listening to the voice that you have inside, and to understand that most of what's outside of you, whether it's social or people or parents or friends or siblings, a lot of that is just noise. and to understand what to filter. I think that's key. We are rapidly running out of time. Sally, if you could kind of bring us to the conclusion, that would be great.
Well, this is, you know, exactly what it is. Just, you know, if everybody can take that time to go inside first and foremost, like we said, you cannot change anybody else on the planet except for yourself. You're responsible for your own happiness, because if you don't go in there and think about what's going on, and it can be scary. It's not an easy thing. Sometimes it can be a really hard process. And you know what? It doesn't take a set period of time. Everybody takes their own time to reach that place. But the important thing is to start and to surround yourself with the right people. Get the help you need if you need help. You know, listen to talks like this, listen to podcasts, listen mm-hmm. to people who are encouraging you in the right direction. But first and foremost, and most importantly, listen to yourself. Trust yourself. Trust yourself. Trust your inner voice. It's there for a reason. It's your guidepost in life. If you listen to it, that is what sets you free. That is what will bring you to your greatness and your greatest potential. You know, you have motivational speakers and whatever, you know, giving talks all of the time, but where does motivation comes from? It comes from motive.
Yep.
It comes from your why, your purpose. Where is your purpose? It's in your soul. Nobody can tell you what your purpose is. Nobody. Only you. If you don't know what it is, that's awesome. Go and discover it, because you're here for an incredibly special reason. And it's up to you to trust yourself. Go figure out why that is.
Right on, right on. It's, and I keep telling everybody, it's not speed, it's direction.
Yes.
You
can go
as fast as you want, you'll just end up going in circles. Find your direction and you know, find that. And sometimes you find that guiding star that kind of just helps you align a little bit. And you're on your way. Sally, thank you so much. The time just flew by. We will most definitely love to have you again for another conversation.
I would love to come back. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much. It's been amazing, Ali.
This has been great. This has absolutely been great. On myself and Latifa, again, thank you so much. This is awesome. Everybody listening, thank you very much. Don't forget, tomorrow we got Wellness Circle. You can sign up on our regular social links and all that stuff. Also, next week, we'll have another Tuesday talk. Take care, be well, stay safe, and be brave. Start being honest with yourself. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. That was amazing.